Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and these days more than daily politics podcast. I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. So it's the day after the Conservatives' manifesto launch, and some in the Tory party believe that you can judge a manifesto as good and as a success if people are not talking about it 24 to 48 hours later. James, this morning, however, people are definitely talking about the manifesto, and the party would want this to a degree, but they're talking about a claim that the Conservative Party would fund 50,000 more nurses. What's the problem here?
The issue is that a large chunk of this 50,000 comes from keeping nurses in the profession who might otherwise leave. I don't mean the claim is that unreasonable because the net number of nurses will be 50,000 higher. Of course, obviously, though, the £350 million a week contribution was gross. So you can say that they are picking their statistical, they pick whichever statistic suits them. But I think, frankly, most political parties do that. I also think that this is not the worst row in the world for the Tory party, because if this is the biggest problem with their manifesto, it has clearly landed a lot better than the 2017 manifesto.
Fraser, isn't there an issue here that Boris Johnson keeps being accused by opposition parties of being something you can't trust, of being misleading, something he doesn't keep his promises? So having this morning's media taken up on various channels, Good Morning Britain, as well as the Today programme, with Cabinet Minister Nicky Morgan ultimately being taken to task on the idea that the Conservatives are misleading to probably be kind, lying to be unkind on the issue of how many nurse places they are funding, isn't really helpful to the narrative, is it?
Oh, no, I disagree. I think this is absolutely perfect. I mean, what the Leave campaign demonstrated was the sort of a spin power of that £350 million claim. Now, at the time, I remember thinking, God, this is terrible. This is a gross figure. They should be honest. They should use a net figure. And I was told at the time, no, don't you see? We're going to have everybody. This is a bit bait for journalists who don't like us. They're going to spend so much time trying to prove that we're liars. In their eyes, they're hurting us. But in fact, all they're doing is talking about how much money we send to Brussels, whether it's 350 or actually the real figure is 200. We've got exactly the same thing with the Tories and the nurses. The debate here is whether the Tories are going to have 20,000 or 50,000 more nurses. But either of these options, they're going to have a lot more nurses, which reinforces the main point that they want to get across here, that the Conservatives are going to be investing a record amount in cash terms in the NHS. So this is a classic trap, the trap that Donald Trump sets for his rivals the whole time, and they take the bait every time, that the thrill of trying to expose your opponent as being not quite technically accurate blinds you to the fact that you're moving the conversation on exactly what he wants, and all the average person back at home is hearing is whether it's going to be a little bit in the direction they want or a lot in the direction they want. Either way, this is not about the Tories dismantling the NHS.
James, do you think it's correct to say the view in Conservative campaign headquarters is ultimately like almost there is no such thing as bad publicity to a degree? If you have something slightly controversial in your numbers, also in your social media, we've seen with claims they're doctoring videos, so long as it gets people talking about your ultimate message, that is a positive for the party. Do you think that's how they see things?
I think that is how some people see. I think it is worth saying
a majority in CCHQ.
Yes, I think the majority of people think that if people are talking about it, that's right. Interestingly, I don't think you'll see them doing that Fact Check UK thing again. Quite a senior person in very close to Boris Johnson said to me, it was just one of those things on a campaign that hadn't really been thought through.
So some junior guy thought it'd be a good idea and they hadn't worked out.
Katie, when you wrote about this 80-20 rule they have, that they on the Tory digital operation is just going to do stuff and 20% of it's going to go wrong, 80% of it's going to work, but that's the way they operate.
And the price is moving fast.
And I think, I'm not saying that the people who did it think this, but I think in the broad view in CCHQ is that the Fact Check thing didn't work, in that it created a bigger row than they intended. I think they thought this was a tweak of a tale, and then they found it leading the lunchtime news, and they were like, oh, whoops. So I think that's a problem. I also think there's sometimes, I think that we can slightly I think everyone needs to start working out kind of the credibility point here. This is what the Tories want to hit Labour on. The Tories want to hit Labour on the fact that their manifesto isn't credible. I think that this row about the nurses, I think this fits into the fairly normal range of political debate.
Also this weekend, Fraser, aside from the manifesto launch, we had a series of polls. And what these seem to be consistent in is suggesting the Tories have quite a comfortable lead. And the Sunday Times had a seat-specific projection, where, again, it gave the Tories a comfortable majority. It said that there were some Brexiteers who could be in danger, such as Dominic Raab, but ultimately the end result would be a comfortable Tory majority. Do you think we're now getting to a point where... And again, I say this with some caution because of 2017, but is the Tories to lose?
Well, it's certainly the case that this election is the Tories to lose insofar as the question from here into polling day is, can Boris blow it? Will the Tories self-destruct in some way? And the fact that they've got through the manifesto without the wheels coming off the wagon is shows that they're gone one better than Theresa May. But some of these polls I do take with a large pinch of salt. I mean, take the Sunday Times poll, that they said Dominic Raab is in danger because his majority might go now from 22,000 to 3,000. 3,000 is still a pretty big majority. I know quite a lot of MPs who would love to have a 3,000 majority. So, again, I can't quite worry. I don't think Dominic Raab's in mortal danger. Really, I mean, he might be. But the question behind all of this is whether we journalists can remind ourselves of when Lord Ashcroft was in 2015 doing these individual, very highly focused constituency polls. And we said to ourselves at the time, look at this. He's polled all these Tory marginals. He's shown the Tories I've got no hope in them as a very expensive poll. It all turned out to be complete nonsense. So it could well be that the pollsters have managed to readjust their algorithms and have found a way of predicting elections in the way that has eluded them for the last three or four major elections. My own personal rule is I'm going to start to have confidence in opinion polls once they get not one but two elections right. And until that happens, I'm going to stop myself, data geek though I am, reading too much in predictions that carry a decimal point. Because as we found out before, decimal point doesn't mean it's anything less than nonsense.
And we will still keep having acclaimed pollsters onto this podcast to offer their analysis, whether or not it ends up being correct. Now, James, in your cover piece in this week's Spectator magazine, you write about Remain's last stand. And one of the aspects at play here is, if it seems as though the Tories are on course for a majority, and not just even a slim majority, but a fairly comfortable one, that could be the trigger that is needed to start getting the various opposition parties to talking about electoral pacts, where they should be putting in tactical voting. So not officially signing down candidates, it's way too late for that, but starting to think, who do I need to tactically vote for to limit the chances of a Tory majority or a large one? Do you think that's what we might start to see happening in the coming weeks?
Well, the Lib Dems have already moved to half a tactical voting pitch, the half that benefits them. They basically say, we're the only party that can deny the Tories a majority. And I think you can say that they're making a pretty clear pitch to Labour voters to lend them their votes in seats such as Dominic Raab, saying that, you know, look, if all you Labour voters pile in behind us, we might beat the Tory. They've obviously not gone as far as to say the uncomfortable bit of tactical voting for them, which is in lots of other seats, would you please vote Labour, because they're the best place to beat the Tories. And I think if you ask Tories what makes them nervous now, and I think they are, in private, becoming a bit more confident. What makes them nervous is the prospect of massive Remain tactical voting. And also what makes them nervous is precisely what we've been discussing on this podcast about a majority, because their fear is that if as more of these so-called MRP models come out, which were more accurate last time than anything else, saying that Tories are on course for a majority, but the conversation on podcasts like ours, and perhaps more importantly, he says through gritted teeth, on the big evening news bulletins and the radio bulletin news bulletins, comes all about how big the Tory majority is going to be. But that could cause them two problems. One is, in southern seats, you could get Tory Remainers who are sticking with the party right now because largely out of a fear of Jeremy Corbyn, thinking, actually, I am a bit cross with them because I don't really love Brexit, so I'm going to vote Lib Dem to give them a kick because I can do that safe in the knowledge that Jeremy Corbyn isn't going to become Prime Minister. One Tory MP defending a seat against the Lib Dem says that if on polling day his constituents believes that his seat will make the difference between a hung parliament and a Tory majority, he will be returned as the MP. But if they think his seat is going to be the seat that gives Boris Johnson a 50-seat majority, he will lose to the Lib Dems. And then the other danger for them is, if this idea gets going that the Tories are going to win and win fairly comfortably, some of those voters, Labour voters who've currently switched over to the Tories, take fright at the idea of what the Tories kind of off the leash might do, and either stay at home on polling day or decide that they're going to vote for their local Labour MP to be a kind of local champion. I think one of the things that's interesting is that if you talk to the pollsters, Fraser Cuffier is, one of the things that has pushed Labour's numbers up in this campaign is when polling companies move to naming the candidate standing in your area, and that has given these Labour incumbent MPs a bit of a boost.
Now, finally, the other piece, I suppose, of big election news we had over the weekend came from Nicola Sturgeon. She was talking about the price of the SNP's support in propping up a minority government, presumably Labour. And she said Trident would be up there, and the idea of discontinuing Trident, and one suspects at the very least moving it away from Scotland. Fraser, this in a way seems like it might be one of the easier pledges to get Jeremy Corbyn to agree to if he was Prime Minister. While at the moment there are no current plans for Labour to end Trident, we know that Jeremy Corbyn has opposed it previously.
Sure, we know that Jeremy Corbyn is generally against nuclear deterrence, even though the Labour manifesto says that they'll keep it. There was no prizes for guessing where Corbyn's personal loyalties and beliefs lie. I think he's said something like he'd be up for disarmament if everybody else does it. But I'm afraid to say I don't believe Nicola Sturgeon on this point. If there were to be a hung parliament, and if the SNP were in a position to make Jeremy Corbyn Prime Minister, and Corbyn said to them, look, I will do this, I will offer you a referendum, Nicola Sturgeon, that's my pledge to you. Sure, I went on the debate saying I would give you nothing for at least 2 years, but if I change my mind and I promise to give you a referendum whenever you want it, would you put me in number 10? Because your choice is a government with me and a genuine referendum prospect, or a government with the Tories who would not, who would close the door for a long time. He should call her bluff, and I don't think anybody doubts for a second that would be enough. She would drop her Trident demands. He can offer her some emollient words in Trident. But what she wants is to go into the next Holyrood election saying, vote for the SNP and we will have this new referendum. This is what the activists want. My friends and family who are SNP members are absolutely itching for a referendum very soon. And that is what's going to get them out to vote. This time it's going to get them to vote SNP at the next election. It has to be the chance of having an independence referendum before Britain leaves the EU. Not a pretty tight timetable there, but if Labour gets in power, then I think Brexit will be delayed for quite some time, perhaps indefinitely. Scottish independence becomes a lot more likely. So that deal is very, very much still there to be made. And that's why I am not as relaxed as a lot of other people at Labour's low opinion poll rating. I don't think Labour will get a majority, but they don't need one. All they need to do is to get close enough for the SNP to install Corbyn, and all he needs to do is promise them what the Tories have promised not to give them. That's the referendum.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And while we have you here, we have a Spectator event coming up on the 11th of December, the Spectator Christmas Special Year in Review. We have sold the vast majority of tickets and there are a handful left. And it'll be myself, Fraser Nelson, along with a range of our columnists from Mary Killen of Gogglebox fame, Rod Liddell and Rory Sutherland, looking back at what has been an extraordinary year. And to buy tickets for this event, just go to www.spectator.co.uk/review.